You're listening to Unceded Airwaves by the Indigenous Collective at CITR 101.9 FM. Unceded Airwaves is broadcasting from the traditional, ancestral, unceded, and current lands of the Hunkaminam-speaking Musqueam people. Today's show intro was by Buffy St. Marie and Tanya Tagak. Unceded Airwaves broadcasts every week from the traditional, ancestral, and from the traditional, ancestral, and unceded lands of the Hunkaminam-speaking Musqueam people. Van Gwynsey. My name's Autumn Schnell. I'm Treaty 11 Gwich'in. I was born and raised on Treaty 6 territory of the Cree, Métis, Saulteaux, and Nakota Sioux people. I acknowledge that I am an uninvited guest on the traditional, ancestral, and unceded lands of the Musqueam, Squamish, and Tsleil-Waututh people. Thank you to the Hunkaminam-speaking Musqueam people who host us today on their territory. We want to thank our sponsors, Decolonizing Water and NORAD Electric. You're listening to Season 3, Episode 1 of Unceded Airwaves. Today we'll be talking about the Hunkaminam language, or today we'll be talking about Hunkaminam language revitalization and then doing a little review from Season 2 with Nikita and Mario. But before we get into it, let's set our intention for the day.
Okay, so hi everyone. My name is Nikita. I'm from the Tahltan First Nation, but I grew up in Smithers, BC, which is on Wet'suwet'en territory. And just a little bit about the collective. So we're an Indigenous radio collective, and every week we discuss Indigenous issues, current events, and entertainment. And we're a collective of Indigenous and non-Indigenous students who use our weekly airtime for our own self-representation.
We strive to center Indigenous voices on our show to build narratives that empower Indigenous people. Self-representation in media is something that Indigenous people do not often have access to.
Yeah, so the show gives us the opportunity to share and define who we are as Indigenous people. And Indigenous cultures are incredibly diverse, and the nuances of our diversity are not always represented in the mainstream broadcast media.
It can be difficult to find positive Indigenous role models in popular media, so this show offers an opportunity to highlight some influential Indigenous people.
Yeah, and if you can relate to the goals of the show and are wondering how to get involved, please reach out to us, and you can always do that on our social media. We have Facebook, Twitter, and if you have a voice for decolonization, then we want to hear from you.
Everyone is welcome. There is no experience necessary. Our weekly meeting is every Monday at 4 p.m. at CITR in the lower level of the Nest. If you want to get involved but don't want to be on air, there are plenty of opportunities.
So you can follow us on Unceded Airwaves on Facebook and Twitter. If you're aware of a great Indigenous artist, please send us a tweet using the hashtag Unceded Music, or you can send us a Facebook message at Unceded Airwaves, and we will do our best to get it on the air. And if we play a song that you send us, then we will even give you a shout out on the show.
We're always looking to hear from our listeners about what you're up to. So let us know about any Indigenous artists that you're into right now and what events are happening that you're attending or promoting. As always, we'll post a link to the podcast of this episode afterwards. And we'll have our weekly Unceded Events listening to share a little later in the show.
Thank you. Guitar and Discorders Shindig is back for the 34th year and is hosted at Hastings Mill Brewing Company, formerly known as Pat's Pub, every Tuesday night.
We've curated a spicy roster of local musicians, and there are 27 bands, 27 winners, but someone has to take home the Shindig Windig crown from last year's champ, Little Sprout.
Come watch bands jam out, have fun, and battle it out for some rad prizes provided by our sponsors.
Sarah Fox Postering,
Nimbus Recording, Cannery Brewery,
Pandora's Box,
Vader Master Studios, Rain City Recorders,
Mint Records,
Music Waste, Live from Thunderbird Radio Hell,
Six Cent Press,
Blue Light Studios, Hastings Mill Brewery,
Print Print.
Come out this Tuesday, November 7th for Fun Fact Fodder performances by Sorry Edith, Rain Cloud, and No Mothers.
Conservation is the first and best resource option for BC. Do your part. Turn off the lights when you leave a room and unplug your cell phone charger when charging is complete. Visit bchydro.com to find out more ways you can make a difference. This message brought to you by BC Hydro Power Smart and CITR 101.9 FM Vancouver.
The song you just heard was by Mitch Koda. Mitch Koda is a Montreal-based Algonquin artist, and she just released her album called Kaha Care. Mitch Koda is a wonderful segue into language revitalization. Here we talk to Grace Point and Patricia Shaw about language revitalization on Musqueam territory.
Musqueam. I'm a status First Nations Indian.
And I'm Patricia Shaw, and I was born and raised in Montreal, which is traditional Mohawk territory, but I've been privileged to be living here on the traditional ancestral unceded territory of the Musqueam people for many years now.
Thank you. So how did you initially become interested in language revitalization?
I was working as an intercultural education advisor at the Ontario Institute for Studies in Education way back when it was in its early days, and I was working with Indigenous students from all around the world and became very interested in issues of different languages and how they correlated with different thought patterns and different cultures. And essentially was grappling with what I didn't know how to label then, but it's what's called the Sapir-Whorf hypothesis, how much of our thinking and ways of being and knowing the world are conditioned by our language and how much is independent of language. And so I was working with a number of African and South Asian students who spoke very minority languages, and then I became aware that the Canadian languages from our First Nations and Aboriginal peoples were seriously underdocumented, and then started working with them, and I've been working with them for a number of generations now.
Oh, lovely. And what about you, Grace?
When did I become interested in language revitalization?
Yeah.
Last year. I kind of fell into the whole thing. I found out about the Musqueam language program through my sister, actually. We'll just say a long time ago. And my sister came to me and said, "Do you want to take the language with me? It's worth 6 university credits." So I was like, "Sure." That sounds good to me. And so I had to go to university to learn my own language. And through that, I developed a love for it, of course. And then I kept going back. So I would audit the course. And then I found out I could actually take it again. And then I audited again. And this is all in between raising kids and having a job. And then I changed jobs. It was just too much stress, and I needed a different life. So it a posting came up where I could apply for a position with the Musqueam Language Department. And I got it, thanks to all of my auditing and attending classes. And that's where I discovered what the word revitalization means. So
you were involved before, and then you just kind of learned what the word meant afterwards?
Unbeknownst to me, I was revitalizing the language in myself.
That's really cool.
Yeah.
So now what are you doing to help revitalize your language or other languages?
Well, as I said, I'm working with the Musqueam Language and Culture Department, and I am the preschool language liaison. So I actually go into our preschool and have a little circle time with the kids, and we learn how to count and I help them learn weather terms, and we learn the days of the week, et cetera. So it's just basic language terms that we're trying to encourage in the community through the avenue of the preschool, and that's where I'm involved. And then I do help with the language class that's offered through the university now.
Yeah, and that was the one that you took when you were first getting started with your university experience?
Yeah.
That's cool. What about you, Patricia? What do you do to help revitalize languages?
Well, here at UBC in the mid-90s, it was the era of land claims. Because Musqueam, amongst other communities throughout the province, had never ceded their traditional territories. And so I initiated at UBC the First Nations Languages Program as one of UBC's responsibilities to being here on Musqueam territory. And the goal was to use the resources that we have at the university, including the human resources, the knowledge bases that we have, the research skills, to actually work in collaboration with community members from Musqueam to train them to learn not only their language, but actually how to work with their language, how to document the language, how to use archived materials about their language, how to spread the language from adult learners who were not given the opportunity to learn it because of residential school and societal pressures at the time, but are very anxious and really keenly motivated to work towards bringing the language back so it's vibrant once again in the community. And so that program's grown tremendously over the last 20 years. So it's not just the adult education program, but the adults that we've had the opportunity to work with are now working with their young kids, the young families, their own family members who are older. Actually, it's spread throughout all generations, not just the babies and the preschool, but the youth. And it's really blossomed.
Yay, that's so good. And then do you see traditional language revitalization as an act of decolonization?
Absolutely, for everybody involved.
Yeah.
And I think we're really fortunate at UBC to have language classes where there are both Musqueam community members in the classroom. They are hosted on the Musqueam territory, so they're hosted in the community. Students from UBC who may never have been on an Indian reserve before get welcomed warmly into the community to do that. And so there's tremendous dialogue and learning that is reciprocal within the classroom that takes place.
I remember you saying from class as well, you're not supposed to go onto a reserve unless you are invited. So it's really nice that you're giving students an opportunity to be invited and to understand what that means.
Well, it's wonderful that Musqueam actually has had such open arms and open hearts to welcome us onto the community.
That's lovely. And then both of you, what acts do you do daily or monthly or regularly to try to decolonize?
I guess what I would say is in working in the office with Jill Campbell, who helped with Dr. Shaw in creating the textbooks for the language class, it's the language is such a treasure, such a precious thing that we're constantly going to our resources and looking at how elders recorded and said, this is how you say something. And so it's funny how we've coined a phrase, I think. We go, no, you can't think with your English brain. So I think that's the key thing that I do. Like, we have to look at how the language was spoken so long ago, and you can't just put it side by side with English. And the colonized way of living, you can't just say, okay, how do I say goodnight? Because it's not a traditional First Nations term.
It's unparalleled.
Unparalleled. And then we'll have people who try to say goodnight, and it's just like, no, that doesn't work.
You're thinking with your English brain.
Yeah.
And what about you, Patricia?
Decolonization is such a complex issue, and it is so pertinent to all of us, I think, because as a non-Indigenous person, I also have been very colonized. Mm-hmm. And so the process of decolonization is one that impacts us all, and we all have to think about what are the ways in which we have been colonized, and what are the aspects of our systems, what are the aspects of our thinking, mm-hmm. as Grace had said, what are the aspects of our interaction mm-hmm. with other people that actually perseverate those modes of thought and behavior, and how can we undo that or move forward and create new modes of interaction that are much more reciprocal and respectful.
Yeah. Now, that's really interesting, because I know lots of non-Indigenous Canadians say that, like, it's really hard for them to find ways to decolonize. So what have your best tips been, like, for yourself, finding ways to decolonize yourself or others?
I think one primary way is interaction. And I know a lot of people, maybe because of shyness, maybe because of ignorance, maybe because of the various kinds of societal prejudices, or maybe because of lack of opportunity, just have not ever interacted with Indigenous peoples. I know a lot of students who come to our classes at UBC, it's their first opportunity to actually have direct, non-threatening interaction with the Musqueam community. And so I think to be able to take that step and cross that threshold and be open to those kinds of interactions are a great initial step. I mean, they also talked on the radio just last night about ways to decolonize. And have you ever read an Indigenous author?
Yeah.
And an Indigenous Canadian author, I mean, there are many recommendations out there following from the Truth and Reconciliation Commission. But I always think that the best kinds of interaction are the interpersonal mm-hmm. ones.
Have you ever read Crystal Fraser's, what she did was she made 150 acts of reconciliation for the last 150 days of after Canada's birthday, and it's really lovely. I can read you some of the pieces. So, like, the first one is learn land acknowledgements in your region. Mm-hmm. The second one is find your local reconciliation organization. Number three, if there isn't one, consider joining together with others to start one. Like, attend a cultural event such as a powwow. Download an Indigenous podcast like Ryan Mahone's Red Man Lightning or Molly Swain and Chelsea Vowell's Métis in Space. Things like that. And it's really cool because it's meant for non-Indigenous Canadians. And I think that that might be a really cool resource, right?
I think I heard about that without knowing who the author was. And so I found it encouraging.
Yeah.
And I wanted to take it for myself even.
Yeah. Me too. I started doing them too. And then how do both of your studies reflect your ability to decolonize?
Well, my studies, I am a student through UBC right now. and it's intense.
Yeah.
But my studies now are focusing on, I have an anthropology class where it's Canadian studies, First yeah. Nations of BC. So it's really enhancing looking at decolonizing and looking at the impacts, et cetera.
That's good. Yeah. Yay.
And I'm in a First Nations Endangered Languages class that's looking at the sounds of First Nations languages. So I think that really will help to enhance and round out my education.
That's good. Yay. What about you, Patricia?
Well, my dedication has been to enhancing the First Nations languages. We have such a diversity of extremely rich language systems. Here in British Columbia alone, we have more than half the Indigenous languages of Canada. And what many people who are from the communities themselves haven't realized is that these languages are renowned internationally by linguists as having extraordinary properties of cognitive value and complexity. And so it's wonderful to be able to work with the communities to be able to show the value of these languages. One of the residential school legacies has been a devaluing of language and culture, and to be able to bring forward the scientific aspects of these languages to the people who know the cultural value of their heritage and their oral traditions, but to be able to validate it from other perspectives for them, I think is really valuable. Literacy is, these languages have never been written down, but many of the elders that I have worked with, when they see their language in writing, or they see a dictionary, or they see a grammar, it somehow is really valued by them.
Yeah.
I have a very close friend who said, when I think it was you, your program, your department, I don't know, your cohorts, working with the Kwakwala, and this person said to me, they're trying to make up new words, like things like adverbs and adjectives and stuff. That's not ever been in our language. And I looked at this person and I went, oh. And I didn't know how to say, yes, they're in every language. Nothing's being made up. It's fine.
Everything's okay. It's never been written down before. So how would you say the general public can get involved in revitalizing the Hunkaminam language or their native languages?
Well, I think our actions with the Tsesnam event and then the following museum exhibits have really helped to shine a light on our language. And I think that's really helping, because there's more people who are interested in how things are said and what is this place name really. And
yeah,
we've had, like, through the office, there's been a lot of requests. The requests have increased to have Musqueam language on signage and out and about in the city.
Yeah.
I actually got a Snapchat from a friend of mine. And in the background, it was, my friend was shocked to see our language in an ice cream parlor. And it said, Eitzweil, or I can't remember, welcome or something like that. But it was really neat to see it in writing in somewhere that I wasn't aware of.
Yeah. And what about you, Patricia? What would you say?
Well, I think that's part of the function of literacy, because literacy extends beyond time and place to be able to relate the language to its traditional territory. And such an important function of language is, of course, grounded in the territory and in the traditional territory. And the Tsasnam exhibits arose out of the situation where the traditional land was being desecrated. And to be able to tell that story to people who didn't know the story and who didn't know the history of Vancouver and the development of Vancouver over very sacred Musqueam sites, but to be able to enhance the telling of that story through the use of the language and bring the language back onto the landscape in the telling of that story in multiple ways, I mean, through the exhibit that was at the Musqueam Cultural Center itself, through the Museum of Vancouver, through the Museum of Anthropology, and now there's a film that was out and it debuted at the Vancouver International Film Festival. So the story is being told and language is an integral part of the history and of the story. It's very beautiful to see that moving forward to the general public.
Yeah, it's changing, which is really nice. And then I know that both of you were involved in the Spirit Awakening Language Revitalization Conference. Would you be willing to just talk a little bit about that and what you did and what your role was and kind of what you were presenting on?
So we had an invitation come 3 months ago, possibly. And it's one of those things where it's another request and another invitation. So it got to the bottom of the email stack. And then we joined together and we were able to put our heads together and get a submission in, and thought that it's extremely important to have our work recognized and put out there and show the world that when I say we, I mean Musqueam is working in partnership with this nice large organization known as UBC and that this partnership has been going on for 20 years, and as a result, the program has grown, and there's been such a growth in the Musqueam community with regard to the language revitalization, and like the conference says, it's an awakening of something that was almost dead. So I was very happy to have a part in it and present the fact that we have a program in the preschool as well as in adult age, having our language being learned and spoken on a daily basis, where it was against the law at one point. So it's extremely exciting to have that being awoke and or awakened, or what are we saying? Waking up there. It's extremely exciting to have the language waking up and being spoke through toddlers as well as grandparents and great-grandparents.
Yeah, that's really good. Yay. and then, yeah.
I think the conference was really exciting as an opportunity for us to address, because we've had this extraordinary gift of 20 years to be able to work together with an amazing team of very dedicated people from the community. Because the challenges of revitalization are extraordinary. Revitalization and reclamation of a language where there have been, as Grace just mentioned, it was against the law to speak the language. And not only were there legal prohibitions, but there was a lot of societal oppression and degradation of hearing the language and just putting it down. And so the hardest part for the older generations is actually getting over the psychological barriers that they have internalized about the language being bad and about all the pain that they have suffered in their memories for when they spoke the language. And so bringing a language back is extremely challenging, not just in the question of, well, you know, what is the language? What is the structure of the language? What did it sound like? How would people say things just in ordinary conversation, which wasn't normally documented because that's not the oral histories that are usually part of what's documented. So it's been a huge psychological journey. And part of the celebration, I think, through the conference was the challenges that actually have been part of the journey and we've moved forward on them, which is not to say that there aren't many challenges ahead, but there's just a tremendously great enthusiasm now as to all the different levels of age groups within the community, families within the community that are participants now in this journey.
That's so good. Yay! And then you also went to Hawaii. Did you go for the same reasons? Grace was talking about this in class the other day.
Hawaii was a dream destination, yes, but I really want to commend the University of Hawaii at Manoa for mounting a special conference that runs every 2 years, and this was the fifth such conference that has taken place, where they bring together from all over the world people who are working towards indigenous language reclamation, revitalization, documentation, conservation. And it because it's a worldwide phenomenon that indigenous languages are in fact under threat, it's extremely exciting and energizing and stimulating and creative to be able to interact with all these people in their different circumstances, many of whom are facing similar challenges. But it's a great opportunity to learn and to share and to network and to leave feeling that there's such hope and optimism.
Yeah, knowing that it's happening worldwide. It's not just you.
Exactly. It was exciting to see a language come back to life where it was almost the same oppression on their language, colonization, destruction of land, and their language is everywhere. It was just very beautiful to see on the bus, you know, on the transit and on street signs. And
this is the Hawaiian language.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then in the conference, it was encouraging to see so many other nationalities come together and find out that there were more than just our little group, because we get our head down in the books and doing our work where we think we're the only one. So it was exciting to see that there was, in particular, this group from, I think it was Peru? I don't think that. One of the
South American
small village had come and was excited to find out that we were doing the same thing, and their language was almost dying because the teenagers are just slipping into the easy form of communication with Spanish.
Yeah.
Because of technology.
Masi Cho, thank you. Do you have anything else to say?
I just want to say thank you very much for your interest and commitment to language revitalization and for decolonization and for giving us this opportunity.
Yeah. Yes, of course. Thanks for coming in.
UBC Theater and Film presents a world premiere shining with love and possibility. Wives and Daughters by Jacqueline Firkins, based on Elizabeth Gaskell's Victorian serial novel, is a charming romp of love convoluted by hidden desires and expectations.
I like to be liked, but when people carry their affection too far, they become troublesome.
Cynthia's a sweet girl and charming, but she was always in some spot of trouble. She wasn't mischievous exactly, but mischief seemed to follow her. Join us from November 9th to 25th at the Frederick Wood Theater. After a certain age, a daughter becomes inconvenient. So we must stop being inconvenient daughters and become inconvenient wives? Theaterfilm.ubc.ca.
Three women, dressed in lingerie, were hanging from the ceiling on meat hooks. In an adjacent room, a man was in bed with two deceased females, also wearing lingerie. He positioned their arms in a sexy embrace. Down the hall, a man holding a chainsaw stood over the motionless body of a sixth woman, lying on a table covered in plastic. These are scenes from a popular music video by a Grammy Award-winning artist. If we want violence against women to stop, shouldn't we stop treating it like entertainment? Join the conversation at #NotOkay.
You just heard Starlight from Nehiyawak. So Nikita, Mario, and Josh were volunteers for Unceded Airwaves for season 2 last year. They were involved in the radio production, airing, and live broadcasts. So we're going to talk to them today about their roles last year, what they liked about the radio, their favorite episodes, and why they recommend getting involved. So do you want to go first, Mario?
Yeah, sure. Hello, everyone. My name is Mario. I am a third-year student here at UBC in the faculty of GRSJ, Gender, Race, Social Justice. And I identify as Niska from my mother and of European settler ancestry from my father. Last year, I had the awesome opportunity of volunteering with the Indigenous Collective through producing radio documentaries and being able to produce live some episodes of Unceded Airwaves and working alongside an awesome crew here.
So my name is Nikita. I am a fourth-year student here at UBC, majoring in the faculty of GRSJ and minoring in First Nations and Indigenous Studies. And I am from the Tahltan First Nation on my father's side and of settler German descent on my mother's side. And I was also a member of the Indigenous Collective last year, which was great. It was my first experience in radio, but I learned a lot about live broadcasting, about making podcasts. It was really awesome. Got to meet some really cool people. And yeah.
My name is Josh Kiyoki. I'm from the Attawapiskat First Nation, and I was also a member of the Indigenous Collective last year, doing some hosting, a few interviews, and some other segments. And that was all a pretty good time. So I don't know. I'm hoping to get involved this year again as well. So, yeah.
Yeah, that'd be great. We're always looking for volunteers.
I volunteer.
Perfect. And what were the benefits of being in the collective for you all?
I got to make friends. I think.
I was going to say that too, honestly.
Yeah, I think sometimes for most of us, we're all UBC students here. We don't often have time to form a sense of community and get to hang out with each other, our peers, during class time. So I think this provided an opportunity, but specifically a space to collect and, of course, come together on some great causes.
Yeah. And what were your favorite episodes from season two?
I really enjoyed. We did one as part of the 24 Hours of Student Power. There's like a... it was like a special event CITR put on last year, and we did an irregular episode on that, Unseated Mornings. It was at 6 in the morning. So I felt like that one was a real good episode for Lisa Grobov and I just kind of co-hosting, very like ludicrously tired, just kind of deliriously going off on things.
Was that the one where you called Trudeau?
No.
No, that was that would be one of my favorites.
Yeah, that's one of my favorite episodes too.
You want to tell us about that one then?
We did a segment where we tried to call Justin Trudeau to no great effect. But we got through to, like, you know, people in Parliament, but they just kind of did the giggle and say, no, he's not available. But we could not get through. I think that would be a good thing to continue until we can finally get
just keep
something.
Calling Trudeau.
Just keep calling. Persistence pays off, I've been told. So, I don't know. We can do that again.
Yeah.
There's been a whole more year of Trudeau in office to contend with. So we got things to talk about.
That's true.
We got some questions, Trudeau. We got some questions.
Some questions.
Maybe going back to the question, I really enjoyed, maybe it wasn't a specific episode, but producing or helping to produce alongside the rest of the team, PSA, where what we did was we hosted a critical media workshop for the Cedar Youth program here at UBC, and we had them come in for the day or the afternoon, and we recorded a fun PSA that, you know, was basically an advertisement for the Unceded Airwaves show. And so every time I hear that in some of the old episodes, when I listen back, it brings back some really warm memories of getting a chance just to hang out and have some fun with some younger media producers.
That sounds so fun. And how has this experience helped you all grow?
I think for me, like, when I joined the collective, I was in my third year of university, and up until that point, I really hadn't gotten that involved, especially with the Indigenous community here on campus. So for me, it was just a really great opportunity to sort of meet and collaborate with other Indigenous and non-Indigenous students sort of focused on creating a presence here on campus and in Vancouver and Turtle Island in general.
I think for me, it was both the like being part of the community that is the Indigenous Collective, but also being on, like having my words go to air, kind of instilled in me a sort of weird sense of accountability. Like if I was going to be a part of this collective, I kind of had to have some integrity in what I was putting forward. and it was challenging in a way that I hadn't really been challenged before. Like I've definitely, like a lot of the things we talk about, I've talked about in classes and stuff, and I've written about them for classes, but that's, the stakes are only my grades in those cases. So it doesn't really matter other than to me. So I think the being on air, the stakes are a little higher, like I'm reaching an audience, presumably. And so I think that the sense of accountability that came with that really is what helped me grow through volunteering last year.
Victor, what'd you get out of it?
I was really scared though, to talk on air. Sorry, what was the question?
It was, how has this experience helped you grow?
In some ways I have met all these passionate people doing these really nice things here. And actually I am just trying to learn how they organize, like how they just come together and just put, many ideas to work. And so just learning, still learning.
That's great.
Okay, that's
For the unseated events, we have some unseated events here that highlight Indigenous relevant events that you might be interested in attending. The first one is Billy Ray Belcourt is coming on November 16th at the Friendship Center at UBC. Billy Ray Belcourt is a PhD student at the University of Alberta in English and Film Studies. He is launching his book, The World is a Wound. It is a call to turn love and sex to understand how Indigenous peoples shoulder sadness and pain without giving up on the future. His poems upset genre, play with form, scavenging for a decolonial kind of heaven where everyone is at least a little gay. Definitely check it out. I'm going to be there, so that'll be fun. Do you want to talk about Thanks for Giving, Nikita?
Sure. So Thanks for Giving is a play, and it's happening every Wednesday until November 4th on the Granville Island stage. And Thanks for Giving tackles vitally important realities of colonialism and intergenerational trauma in Indigenous communities, mixed families, racism, culture, legacy, and belonging. It tackles LGBTQ issues. I hear it's really good. I'm going to go see it this weekend. Really excited. I think you should check it out as well.
Yeah, and it's happening every Wednesday on the Granville Island stage until November 4th. So there is a Trans Day of Remembrance on November 20th at Carnegie Community Center from 7 to 10 p.m. The Transgender Day of Remembrance was set aside to memorialize those who were killed due to anti-transgender hatred or prejudice. This is very relevant to us and our two-spirited family members. Indigenous peoples have a higher mortality rate than non-Indigenous Canadians, and as do transgender Canadians. So there are many of us who are two-spirited, and we need to show support and solidarity to them in order to decolonialize and bring two-spiritedness back and welcomed into our modern society. And then Missing, do you want to talk about that one, Josh?
So Missing is an opera upcoming, set in Vancouver along the Highway of Tears. This music drama is being created to give voice to the story of Canada's missing and murdered Aboriginal women and girls, and to show that each and every one of these missing people is honored. So it premieres on November 3rd through the 11th at 7:30 at the York Theatre in Vancouver. So be sure to check that out if that's something you'd be interested in.
Yeah, and thanks for tuning in. Thank you to our guests, Grace Point and Patricia Shaw, for offering their insight on Musqueam language revitalization. Thank you to Mario, Nikita, Josh, and Victor for being here and helping out with the show and talking about what season two was. And then thank you to everybody else who helped us set up and things like that. I'm Autumn Schnell, and you're listening to Unseated Airwaves Season 3, Episode 1 on CITR 101.9 FM. To finish off the show, we have a couple songs from some really great Indigenous artists. So,
can I put a little thing up? have you seen in your short long life? Where did those tiny feet roam? All the things you have done on top of being a wife, a mother, a daughter, a home. What have you seen in your short long life? What has your heart overcome? The traditional ways that are hidden away can be revived by the beat of a drum. What have you seen in your short long life? What did those tiny hands do? Stretching, scraping, fixing and making, mending the skins that our souls fit within, stitching, nothing can undo. Traditional ways that are hidden.